Coffee is one of the most popular non-alcoholic drinks in the world. Believed to have originated from Ethiopia, coffee cultivation began in the Middle East, and by the 15th century, coffee houses were common throughout Turkey, Persia, Syria, and Arabia. Today, coffee is grown in more than 70 tropical countries and enjoyed everywhere. It is the second most exported commodity in the world after oil. And today, a simple black cup of Java has now turned into an elaborate specialty drink with various flavored syrups, blended ice, nitro brewed, topped with foam and whipped cream. So what makes coffee so desirable? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be breaking down the ins and outs of the coffee industry. Coffee is a popular beverage that many people enjoy for its taste and the energizing effects of caffeine. Now, there are many types of roasts to choose from, allowing people to find the perfect coffee to suit their taste. Many people also rely on coffee as a source of caffeine to help them stay energized and alert throughout the day. Now, coffee is grown in more than 50 countries around the world, but the majority of coffee beans come from Brazil, Vietnam, and Colombia. The cost of producing coffee varies from country to country, but it typically costs between 50 cents to a dollar per pound of coffee beans. The cost of producing coffee also varies depending on the type of bean. The Arabica coffee bean is the most popular type of coffee bean, and it typically costs more to produce than the less popular Robusta coffee bean. And the coffee beans at this point is a greenish-looking bean, where it is then packed and shipped to the consumer country. The largest consumer is the US, followed by Europe. And once they arrive, the beans are then roasted. Roasters buy the bulk coffee and bake into a margin to resell it to the companies that distribute it, like Starbucks. So for a typical pound bag of premium coffee that sells for $15, you have about $4 that goes to the retailers whose shelf it sits on. Then you have the roaster who takes about $2. Transporting the roasted beans cost about $1.50. And meanwhile, in the roasting process, you lose about 15 to 20% in weight as the moisture is removed from the green beans. So that adds about $2.50 to the price. And you have the $4 per pound for the raw beans in the end. So the coffee business is actually quite a slim margin business, as coffee is considered a basic commodity and there isn't much differentiation. The differentiation comes at the brand level, where you have giants like Starbucks baking in a brand premium for their coffee, which allows them to charge more. And coffee prices depend entirely on supply rather than demand. Demand tends to be relatively inelastic. However, supply can fluctuate due to weather and harvest. And with global warming, many African countries may no longer be able to produce coffee at all. The production might actually move southward, but it is difficult to tell if temperatures, rainfall, and soil chemistry will be amenable to the plant. In 2023, the price of the Robusta coffee has already risen sharply by approximately 30% as the longer rainy season and hotter summer has affected its production. Coffee prices are also linked to fuel prices because of the cost of shipping and transportation. When fuel prices go up, the cost of shipping also goes up and affects the final commodity price of coffee. Surprisingly, Finland tops the list as the world's biggest coffee drinker on a per-person basis. The average Finn drinks nearly 4 cups a day, and coffee is so popular in Finland that 2 10-minute coffee breaks are legally mandated for Finnish workers. This is followed by Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Denmark, where they have a deep respect for the art of brewing and roasting. And this drink is highly prized in Scandinavian countries, where long, dark, cold winters make it highly prized. And it's interesting and funny to note that coffee is grown in some of the hottest places in the world, only to travel and be consumed in some of the coldest places in the world. And now today, we're joined by coffee expert Jonathan Echeverry, owner of Paper Plane Coffee Co. So, Jonathan, the cost of coffee has shown fluctuations over the years. Could you shed some light on the factors that influence these price variations and how they impact coffee growers and consumers alike?
Yes, absolutely. I'd be glad to. So just a little background on who I am. I'm Jonathan Echeverry. I own Paper Plane Coffee Company in New Jersey, but I'm a fifth generation Colombian coffee grower. We've been growing coffee in Colombia now for 160 years about. We've had our farm and our family for about 80 years. And so aside from being on the roasting end here in the United States, we're on the production end as well in Colombia. And so the price of coffee is really kind of dictated based on commodity. Coffee is the second most traded commodity in the entire world. And so you can imagine that, you know, any change based on demand or production will add or take away from that commodity. Just as an example, a couple of years ago, Brazil, who is the number one producer of coffee in the world, had a freeze that affected, I think, millions of pounds of coffee. And that caused a huge spike to happen within the commodity price, which drove the price of coffee up.
Coffee is a beloved beverage consumed worldwide. Can you discuss the regions or countries where coffee consumption is experiencing the most significant growth? And what cultural or economic factors contribute to this trend?
Oh, yes, I'd love to. So coffee, like I said earlier, is the second most consumed commodity in the world. I think 16 million cups are consumed in New York City alone. You see this fluctuation happen. And some of the biggest increases that we're seeing in coffee consumption are in China, India, and Vietnam. A lot of that has to do with a lot of the younger generations leaving their home and going to study abroad, either in Europe, North America, South America, or just any coffee consuming country in the world. And then bringing that back and, you know, just having, and although they grew up in a tea consuming country, they're kind of going and immersing themselves in these cultures where it's coffee heavy. And not to mention that there's also the social media aspect of it. There's this really beautiful culture around social media and taking pictures of latte art and different coffee drinks. And so I think a lot of people bring that back. And that's why we see these huge fluctuations happening in China, India, and Vietnam, as well as economic reasons. You're seeing the economy in those countries rising. So a lot of people are seeing a little bit more money than usual, and so you're seeing that change.
And now fair trade and sustainability have become important considerations for coffee consumers. So what efforts are being made within the industry to ensure fair compensations for coffee farmers and to promote environmentally friendly practices?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people are starting to pay attention to what they consume and how they consume it. I think speaking as far as North America, there was this whole farm-to-table experience where people wanted to know where their food was coming from, you know, what farm. They wanted to have kind of like this interpersonal connection with where their food was manufactured. And adding to that, obviously, like coffee in many cases finishes the meal or begins many people's day. And so that level of connectivity was sought there as well. For most people, coffee is just grown high up in the Colombian mountains and picked by a beautiful mustached man and his trusty donkey. But the truth is much more than that. And so the certifications such as Fair Trade really let us as consumers know that every part along the way, from grower to co-op, to exporter, to importer, to roaster, every single person along those ways or every single entity along the way has been fair trade certified and kind of helps, ensure that there is a little bit more sustainability and equity.
So does fair trade mean a more costly coffee?
It will make a difference in pricing. So we are a fair trade certified company. And we will pay a percentage, or we pay a certain amount of cents per pound that we purchase per year. And so obviously, like, adding to that, it we have to kind of like add that into for the consumer. But something that's a bit tricky is that if somewhere along the way in that chain, if one of the entities that touches that coffee isn't fair trade certified, then the chain is ruptured and that coffee can no longer be listed or sold as fair trade certified. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a better coffee. It just means that the farmers and the facilities where these coffees are passing through are ensuring a better quality of life for the people that work for them.
These days, the specialty coffee market has shown remarkable growth. What differentiates specialty coffee from conventional coffee, and how do the cost and quality compare between the two?
Yeah, I think one of the main differences between specialty coffee and, I guess, traditional coffee or commodity coffee is that it's kind of a combination of everything that I stated. We're really paying attention to who we deal with, who we're working with. Our goal, at least, I mean, me speaking for our company, Paper Plane, our goal is to offer quality over quantity. And I think that resonates with a lot of people. And in many ways, because we have these direct relationships and direct partnerships with producers, the commodity price doesn't necessarily affect us in a great way. I think the biggest people who are affected by commodity fluctuations are the giant corporations who are just really pumping out commodity coffee as much as possible. I mean, obviously, the goal is to, you know, provide profits for their shareholders. And in order for them to do that, they have to drive prices down so they can continue to keep their profits up.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. But please stick around. Coffee expert Jonathan Echeverry will stay with us right after the break. And when we come back, how has the coffee market grown in countries like India and China? We'll have more after the break. While coffee is extremely popular in the West, it is still growing in popularity in others like India and China. Although India's consumption of coffee is minuscule with great headroom to grow, it is a significant producer of coffee, with, of course, the majority being exported. Because although coffee has a long history in India, it isn't considered a native beverage in the region. The legend is that a saint smuggled 7 green coffee beans to India in the 16th century and planted them in southwestern India. This is where coffee took root, but not all of India has adopted coffee culture. Northern India, in particular, has remained loyal to tea. Coffee in India is consumed as filter coffee or instant coffee, and these drinks involve the use of copious amounts of milk. Traditionally in India, if it's not milky, strong, sweet, and hot, it does not qualify as a good cup of coffee. Coffee in India is shade grown in the forest of the Western Ghats, with an abundance of other foliage, and this allows the coffee to imbibe the flavors of the surrounding plants. The overall coffee market size in India was approximately $1.6 billion in 2020 and is projected to grow to $4 billion by 2027. Many Indian consumers are embracing international coffee cafe culture, with cafe chains growing rapidly. There has been a significant shift in the coffee drinking culture in India over the last few years, and there are a lot more craft roasters working with coffee farms in India to provide high-quality coffee, training, and information. And this trend has been identified in other majority tea-drinking nations, such as China, where spending time in coffee shops often represents new lifestyle choices for young urban consumers. China's total coffee consumption grew at an annual rate of 16% between 2008 and 2018, significantly outpacing the 2% global average. In terms of coffee consumption per capita in China, it is still well behind European countries and the US standards. The average Chinese consumes only 9 cups of coffee a year in 2021, compared to Americans who consume 3 cups of coffee every day. However, international chains like Starbucks have rapidly expanded their footprint in China, hoping that it would follow the same trajectory as Japan's coffee adoption. While Japan was primarily a tea-drinking nation in the past, it is now the world's fourth largest consumer of coffee, following the US, Brazil, and Germany. In the US, the most devoted demographic of coffee drinkers is actually those 60 years or older. Around 72% of Americans who are 60 or older drink coffee every single day, but only about 47% of those who are between 18 to 24 years old drink coffee regularly, making it the least coffee-crazed demographic in the country. So for this and more, let's bring in again coffee expert Jonathan Echeverry, owner of Paper Plane Coffee Co. So Jonathan, coffee is often referred to as a commodity. What role does the global coffee market play in determining coffee prices?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I mean, a perfect example is, you know, what happened. It actually happened right in the middle of the COVID pandemic. We saw Brazil's production lessen because of a freeze. And Brazil being the number one producer of coffee in the world, for this particular reason, was about to produce less. And so that was enough to drive the price of commodity coffee way up. And so, you know, Brazil is the number one producer of coffee, followed by Vietnam and Colombia and then Indonesia. Those are kind of the four most production countries in the world. And so any change in production in those countries will see a fluctuation with that. But, you know, geopolitics obviously has a hold on it as well. You know, if there's any changes in trade tariffs, you know, you'll start seeing either a bigger demand or a lesser of a demand, which will change the commodity price of coffee.
So, Jonathan, coffee is often referred to as a commodity. What role does the global coffee market play in determining coffee prices, and how do geopolitical and economic factors influence these dynamics?
We're seeing that right now with, China is a perfect example. People are really talking about the Chinese cultivation and consumption of coffee. I mean, you know, you have a population of 1.2 billion, almost 1.3 billion people, and who primarily consume tea, who are starting to consume more coffee. And so, I mean, just doing math on that, I mean, if 1% or 2% of their population started, 1% more started to consume coffee, that's enough to really cause kind of some damage globally. But I think they're starting to counteract that, and they're actually creating growing regions for coffee in China as well. So you're starting to see these growing regions happen throughout the coffee belt that weren't existing before. I think they're actually even starting to grow coffee in some parts of California, which is really interesting because up until recently, Hawaii and Puerto Rico were the only places within the territories within the United States that were producing coffee. It's going to be really interesting the next 10, 15, 25, or even 50 years of coffee, because, you know, there's a lot of factors that we have to weigh in. We have to obviously weigh in climate change and how that will affect growing production regions, and whether or not that'll just change where our regions are really growing coffee. I try to remain optimistic. Especially because, like I said, we operate with specialty coffee. So our goal is to have direct relationship with our trading partners and, you know, really provide quality and innovation with coffee production, placing an emphasis on fermentation, on drying, on varietals. So it could be really neat. And we might even see kind of exploration among the species of coffee. Even though Arabica and Robusta are our biggest productions right now, we might see more of Liberica eugenoides, or even maybe a larger emphasis on the specialty varietals within Robusta.
As coffee continues to be a staple in many cultures, how do you envision the future of the coffee industry, including the potential for new growing regions and innovations to meet rising demand while maintaining quality and sustainability?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm really interested in. Being as though it's just we've seen the price of coffee really fluctuate within the past 30 years with kind of a downward trajectory as far as costs goes for the farmer side. And so, you know, even the pioneers of specialty coffee and the pioneers of third wave coffee, when they were talking about ethically growing coffee, one of the main then central tenets of it was to be able to provide more profits and a better price for the coffee producer. And so, you know, coffee in and of itself, just by the seed, can only produce so much. And so we're, you know, we obviously started to see now coffee tourism, which is beautiful. I mean, speaking as a Colombian American, you see a lot of glamping sites that are cropping up around Colombian coffee farms, which is beautiful because people can have this like really wonderful experience, like one that I had as a child growing up when we would spend our summers on my grandfather's coffee farm, where, you know, I would wake up at 5 a.m. You know, I'd help milk the cows, they'd strap a basket onto me, and I'd go and I'd help the workers pick coffee. And to me, that experience is one of a kind. And so, you know, when people are wanting to have this experience, especially people who have a love for coffee, I can imagine a better way of doing that than actually going and picking the coffee, trying the coffee, even roasting the coffee, and having that experience. But the goal is obviously to return more money to the farm, to the farmer. That way we continue to promote agriculture. Other than that, I mean, people will start to leave the fields.
Today, coffee has evolved beyond a beverage into a lifestyle. So how are coffee-themed experiences such as coffee tours, tastings, and coffee-themed merchandise contributing to the coffee's industry growth and diversification?
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, you know, you see these coffee experiences throughout the world. I mean, Panama offers some really great experiences. Ethiopia as well. It has wonderful coffee origin experiences. I believe Kenya does as well. I mean, really, if you search and you know, the best way to do it is to like have a favorite origin of your coffee. And then, you know, if it's Rwanda, if it's Burundi, if it's Indonesia, just look it up. There's more than likely going to be a farm that's offering some sort of experience where you can go firsthand and see how coffees are being processed. I mean, especially if you look back at Ethiopia, said to be the birthplace of civilization, but even the birthplace of coffee as we know it.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for all your time today. Now, as the coffee industry continues to grow, you can't help but wonder, are people addicted to coffee? And has caffeine addiction become normalized? Caffeine is the most widely used psychoactive substance in the world, where more than 80% of adults regularly consume caffeine. Caffeine affects the same parts of the brain as cocaine, but in completely different ways. And there's evidence for caffeine withdrawal symptoms such as caffeine blocks adenosine receptors, which can cause the body to suffer from headaches, fatigue, and irritability if caffeine intake decreases. But caffeine use is classified as dependence, not an addiction. And this makes coffee the perfect drink because people become dependent on the wake-up effect to function in the mornings, and with prolonged use, will require higher and higher amounts to achieve the same effect. An average cup of coffee contains about 100 milligrams of caffeine. Too much caffeine can cause headaches and migraines. And individuals who metabolize caffeine slowly may also have an increased risk of heart attacks, elevated blood pressure, and can worsen anxiety, insomnia, and cause jitteriness and heart palpitations. I'm Christy I. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.